character builds. Everyone has them or wants them. We decided to do something unique where we added rules imposed on a character. Our goal is to provide fun builds, which may or may not be novel, to fill an adventuring party niche. We call the segment Twist Builds. Welcome to Dueling GMs. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Anthony.
This is a show for GMs and players.
One about designs and details.
To build a better role-playing community. Let's get into the general character building rules and then talk about our character.
Great. So we set up a list of 10 rules and we're going to always abide by them. Rule number one, establish a theme, declare a concept, and impose a twist.
Rule number two, all characters are level 10 using point buy.
Rule number three, all races and classes are acceptable without explanation.
Rule number four, all Tasha's optional rules can be used.
Rule number five, no homebrew unless it's semi-official on D&D Beyond.
Rule number six, multiclassing is allowed, but must follow requirements for ability scores.
Rule number seven, no magic items unless the class somehow grants them. Any mundane items are allowed.
Rule number eight, all subclasses can only ever be used up to a total of 10 levels. We want to showcase different builds this way.
Rule number nine, established settings will be within the world we've been creating in our other workshops. We'll continue adding things to the world in future episodes.
And rule number 10, these builds are purely for fun and quirky concepts. They may be somewhat optimized, but no guarantees. All right, so today's build for our twisted characters is what theme, Anthony?
Well, we decided to both of us tackle an ice only build.
Yeah. And I think that sort of plays into our twist as well, is that it's super specific, right?
Yeah, that really kind of was the twist. As much as possible, avoid most other, at least elements, I think is what we decided. No other elements. So yeah, and I think we ended up coming up with two slightly different attempts here.
I think so.
I think we have a melee type of feel and a spellcaster. So you've been going first so far. Why don't you continue the tradition? Tell me what you got.
All right. So high level, I went barbarian 4 levels and warlock 6. I went with a Goliath race and the athlete background. So first thing that most people are probably wondering is, Joseph, what the heck? Barbarian, they can't focus on spells, and you decided to multiclass into warlock. What's going on here? I went with the ice cold route where the cold damage and pretty much this whole build is based around the spell Armor of Agathys. It's a spell that basically lasts for an hour when you cast it, and when you receive damage, from a melee attack, they in turn take flat damage. I believe it's 20 cold damage at third level. So this build,
yeah, it's five per spell level.
Yeah. Five per spell. Got it. So at third level, that's pretty much the spell that they would use before combat or right when combat starts. It doesn't require concentration, so there's no need for anything past that. You just cast it, and that's pretty much, you know, for a warlock, two spells is plenty anyway, right?
Yeah, we've talked about that before, that for a warlock, you need to find some spells that are going to last, or you're going to be able to maintain concentration because you have so few spell slots. So yeah, I think that's a perfect starting point. And yeah, so what else do you get for Armor of Agathys?
Well, honestly, I don't remember what you're referring to.
Your temporary hit points also.
Oh yeah. Temporary hit points. Yep.
So already for a barbarian, you're going to be pretty beefy, but now you're boosting your own temporary hit points.
Yeah, so it lasts until the temporary hit points go away.
Right.
So that's kind of part of the fun, right? Is how do I keep these temporary hit points going as long as possible so that my cold damage just keeps on hitting them? So that's partially where the barbarian comes into play. For those of you unaware of what rage is, it basically gives resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, slashing, adds a little bit to strength. But let me dive into the abilities first. I have a strength of a +4, dex of +1, con for +2, intelligence, wisdom -1, and charisma at a +1, which is enough for at a 13 for multiclassing into warlock. So yeah, with rage, again, this is a strength based individual here. So there's a fun bit there where, you know, incoming damage, you're hopefully having the majority of it. So that will help keep your armor of Agathys going for a bit. There was also two other ways that I was able to kind of keep my hit points lasting a little bit longer. The other, one of them comes from the Goliath race, which has a stone's endurance, which as a reaction, you can reduce damage dealt to you by 1d12 +2 at this current level. And so the reason is you want to be hit, right? But you don't want to lose those temporary hit points.
Or you don't want to be hit if it's not at melee.
Right, yeah.
So reducing that would be great, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So my armor class is a 15 to hopefully soak some hits, to actually get hit so that they in turn get hit with the cold damage.
Sure.
But, you know, if it's too high for some reason, then, you know, you don't want to, you're going to miss, or they're going to miss their attacks, and then you're going to not be able to apply the cold damage. So the main things with the barbarian, I went with the path of the ancestral guardian. So that's probably the closest thing, you know, there is to aggro. Whenever you hit someone, once you're raging, Spectral Warriors show up. And until the start of your turn, the target has disadvantage on any attacks that isn't you. So you want to, you know, have those attacks coming into you, and so then they have a choice of disadvantage against someone else or, taking this cold damage.
Makes sense.
Yeah. The other aspect with the warlock is at 6th level, you get a Guardian Coil, which is, the Fathomless Warlock, essentially kind of involves these tentacles of the deep, for bonus action. So after you raid, you can summon this 10-foot long tentacle within 60 feet of you, and it lasts for a while. This doesn't count as, you know, casting a spell. So you don't have to worry about, you know, spell casting while raging there. It does cold damage. It makes a spell, melee spell attack. So it's kind of you gotta really, you know, look at the wording there. You can't cast or concentrate on spells, but, you know, melee spell attacks, there's nothing that says you can't do, within the rage capability. Yep.
The wording is you can magically summon a spectral tentacle. Yep. So you're not casting a spell.
Yep.
You're just bringing it into existence.
Yeah, I like it. So yeah, that's a little extra cold damage that you can do each round, assuming you hit. My charisma isn't very high, so it's a lot less likely it will hit, but it's an extra free attack essentially for bonus actions if it's close by.
Sure.
You know, you can always up your charisma from this point on, strictly for the tentacles, but it was one of those things that, again, just additional cold damage. This isn't the main thing. The main thing jumps at level 6 with Guardian Coil. is while your tentacles are, it can basically defend you or others, and it tries to interpose itself between you or a creature within 10 feet of the tentacle. You can use your reaction and reduce damage by 1d8. Yes. So that's essentially another way to kind of keep those temporary hit points going so that your cold damage keeps going.
Yeah, nice.
So we got cold damage coming from the tentacles. We got the cold damage coming from the armor of Agathys. Main attacks, you know, just straight up strength based great axe or of the sorts. My feats that I went with is Great Weapon Master. You know, nice and beefy. You know, if someone drops a zero, you can make another melee attack there. You know, it just helps with you know, you can take a minus five penalty on the attack roll to get a plus 10 damage. That's just an extra nice bonus there. The other one that I went with was the Elemental Adapt Cold. So spells that you cast ignore resistance to cold damage, which would be again focused on the armor of Agathys. When you roll damage for a spell that you cast that deals cold damage, you treat any one on a damage die as two. This won't work with the armor because that's just straight damage. It could arguably work. Again, this is that weird fine line. This says specifically if you cast something that deals cold damage, then it treats ones as two. So this might not apply for the tentacle, but ignoring that cold resistance is important when most of the hits or most of the damage you're dealing is going to be cold damage.
Right.
So that was kind of the focus there. I went with, going back to the Warlock, I went with Pact of the Blade, which gives and invocations with the improved Pact weapon, which gives, you know, plus one to attack and damage rolls on top of the rage. So kind of helps there. Thirsting Blade, so I can attack twice as an action for my attack action.
Sure.
And then the other one that I went with was Eldritch Smite. And reason I went with that was, you know, in the off chance or when your Armor of Agathys drops, you do have that second spell slot. So your choice would be to either drop Rage, recast the Armor of Agathys, and then go back into Rage. Definitely doable. But Eldritch Smite is not a spell that's being cast. So while raging, you can just use your spell slot in another way that just does force damage. And it's 1d8 plus another 1d8 per spell level, so third level, and you can knock the target prone if it's huge or smaller.
Makes sense. That's just, you can determine whether it's a battle of attrition that you need to just outlast everything, or I just need to finish this. Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's a way to, you could stay in rage, you could be that barbarian, and you can use your other spell slot essentially without having to cast a spell.
Right.
So that was kind of the backup. So, you know, you're using, you got two different main things for cold damage. You're doing a lot of damage with your Great Weapon Master, with your rage, with your plus one and your Eldritch weapon. Essentially just trying to keep those temporary hit points. And if you have any party members that can also give temporary hit points when you're getting low, since temporary hit points just swaps to the highest one, that technically would keep your armor bag going
that,
even longer. Yeah. But you know, this is in a vacuum here. So just this character, you know, you also get resistance to cold damage from this, Warlock Patron, swimming speed of 40 feet, breathe underwater. So, you know, a couple other fun things. And I went with a lot of like utility based spells. So if you're out of combat, you're not raging, you know, you can you know, Prestidigitation, Minor Illusion. I also added Frostbite here as a cantrip, just because if they are ranged, you don't have to rage yet. You can, you know, make use of something just in the meantime until they get closer.
Right.
And that still ignores their cold resistance if they have any. So just an extra fun bit there.
Yeah, I think the thing I like about this the most is the tentacles allows you to be not necessarily just as viable, but very viable at range to kind of pick off the people who are too afraid to come in because of the armor.
Sure. Like
it forces them to still have to deal with the fact that you're pummeling them around. It really gives you a cool different spellcaster-y feel to the cleric, the spiritual weapon. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bonus action to summon initially and then bonus action to move and attack again, which is basically how the spiritual weapon works.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're almost like the icy cleric, but it's icy rage cleric.
Right.
So yeah, that means, okay, come at me and face, you know, the brunt of my wrath, or stand around the back and I'll smack you around with my, you know, Kraken tentacles.
Right.
And nothing is, you know, nothing is safe because I can just keep moving that thing around even if I don't ever move. Yeah, I like that idea.
And then if you hit them with the Ancestral Guardian, then, you know, they have to hit you back, and
right,
then they'll experience that cold frostiness from your armor as well. So yeah. So yeah, all based on cold for the most part, but still being able to hit, you know, just normally with some attacks. But I like that this was all kind of a unique melee build that isn't focused on spell slinging, I guess.
Sure.
So just slightly different. I don't know if this is a good build or just an okay one, but I think if charisma was up a little higher, I'd feel a little bit better with that tentacle for bonus attacks, which, you know, very doable, you know, with different feats or different ability score increases there. It's sitting on a 13 right now. You know, it also gives the barbarian, which doesn't usually have a lot of bonus action things, to have a good solid, you know, per round bonus action. So
right.
Even if it hits once in a while, that's better than nothing at all. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, he's got some, as they all do, proficiencies and skills, dex, and strength based skills. And then I think the only charisma one that I have is intimidation, which I thought was kind of a fitting one.
Sure.
For being a warlock, but then just also being a big old Goliath there.
Makes sense.
Oh yeah. I think that's pretty much it for the build. Oh, the other thing that I don't know if it's super important, but depending on rules, is that with the Oceanic Soul, which gives you the cold resistance from the Fathomless Patron, while you're submerged in water, any creature is also submerged can understand your speech, and you can understand theirs, which I don't know if that plays into like verbal spell casting or not, but if that's ever a necessary thing, and if the, you know, if your GM is like, you have to, you know, they have to be able to understand you, or you need to be able to understand yourself, you know, I don't know, but I'm like, oh, well, you know, outside of just communication, which is also super important, he's still also casting spells, and it's like, I don't know if that plays a big role or not, but either way, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of builds that can make use of bonus actions, and that's one of the biggest complaints that I think a lot of people have for barbarians, is that there's nothing you can do with your bonus action. Once you're raging, that's your one bonus action.
Right.
So yeah, I like the fact that you can do, not only can you cast some spells and be a little more versatile there, but you can make use of a bonus action instead of the typical barbarian, which is run up, punch things, and then my turn's over.
Yeah, it feels very like defendery, gardeny, you know, guardian type style where it's like, I'm trying to protect my allies and you focus on me, but when you do, you're going to get that cold damage. So
yeah.
So that's pretty much it for my build. Let's hear yours.
All right. Well, I call this the Icy Chaos. The stats across the board, -1 on strength, +3 dex, +2 con, -1 intelligence, +0 on the wisdom, and +4 on charisma. So you can tell already I'm leaning pretty heavy into that sorcerer warlock blend there. So I end up going 8 levels of sorcerer with the draconic ancestry, and specifically the white dragon.
Okay.
And you gotta get the ice there.
Sure.
So that gives me a little bit of help with some of the stats, honestly, because that helps with my armor class. So between my dex and the draconic resilience, AC is still 16, even though I'm not wearing any armor, which is not too bad, and increases your max HP by how many levels in the class that you've got. So despite those stats, he's sitting at 90 hit points, which is not terrible.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then let's see. He also at a higher level with that will get the elemental affinity for cold. So when you cast spells that deal damage of that type associated with your draconic ancestry, you can add +4 to 1 damage roll of the spell. So this is different from some of the other things that we looked at, where it is per like person. This is +1 or +4 to an entire damage roll. And if that damage is applied to multiple people, they all get the +4. And you can also spend a sorcery point to gain resistance to the cold damage for an hour if that's necessary. Beyond that, let's see, the two metamagic types that I took were twin spell, and I'll go into details on that in a second. But the other one was transmuted spell, because technically I could cast a different spell and then switch it to ice in order to get the elemental affinity and the +4 damage. So theoretically, I could have taken all sorts of spells like fireball or whatever if I wanted to. But I still did keep it for the most part in the same vein here. My other two levels were in warlock. And Joseph, you know, this is actually an NPC you guys have had the opportunity to square off against and then missed your chance. So he's floating around in our current campaign world at a much higher level than this level 10. So I had to dumb it down and then change a few things. One of the things that I changed was the warlock connection here. And so I also went fathomless.
Oh, all right.
But I've only got 2 levels of fathomless, and that one is mostly a flavor thing. But then also, if I ran out of sorcery points for the spell casting stuff, which I'm looking at, it looks like I did also lose. Like I said, I had to lower this down, so I may have to completely change this build a little bit as I'm talking through this. I'm looking at it now. Well, I'm missing quickened. So I could still go in blasting. This is not nearly as dangerous of a spellcaster all of a sudden. So what I would probably do is change out that transmuted spell to the quickened spell. Because again, most of the spells that I have are already ice based as it is. Anyway, once I run out of the sorcery points, the issue then becomes the same thing as what we talked about with yours. What do you do with your bonus actions?
Yeah. Okay.
Enter Tentacles of the Deep. So, again, having that thing that's floating around like your spiritual weapon to start smacking things around. And the additional fun thing with this build is that, round one, almost without fail, and I will give you some of the exceptions here in a minute, but almost without fail, greater invisibility.
So you summon the tentacle and just disappear?
I mean, yes, because then there's something else there, but the entire build becomes a lot more deadly, even though his armor class isn't massive, his hit points aren't massive, you know, his strength is extremely low. But if he's just sniping at you from places that you can't see, I mean, it's going to be much harder to corner him to deal damage to him. And especially if the, you know, the simple approach is do your attack and then take your move and run to a location that they don't know where it is. So they're always guessing, you know, they're going to have to actually start to coordinate and either figure out ways to counter the greater invisibility or hold their actions in certain locations until they see you, assuming they're facing the right direction, assuming they're in range, all that sort of stuff, and then take their actions. And they're going to have to go out of their way to make that work. So just concentrating on greater invisibility is kind of the bread and butter of this. But depending on the situation, the location fight may take place. He also has access to darkness to concentrate on instead, or fairy fire to make everybody else visible and, and, you know, can't do the same thing to him that they were doing, but also much easier to attack. And that becomes a lot of fun for another reason. It's because I think we talked about this off air, but even as we were talking about it, I went back and changed it. One of the feats that I took for him was Elven Accuracy. So if you're using Fairy Fire, you're attacking with advantage, then Elven Accuracy means you get to add a third dice roll. So all of your pew-pewing, you're rolling 3d20 on your attacks, the likelihood of critting goes up through the roof.
That's true.
So yeah, the basic concept of this, regardless of how the battle scenario sets up, whether it's I'm staying invisible, whether they're in darkness and one of my invocations is Devil Sight, so to see in magical darkness, or whether it's fairy fire and I'm doing every single attack with, you know, 3d20, I kind of have the upper hand and I can set the stage for how the battle is going to play out.
Yeah.
Beyond that, though, the actual combat playing out would look a lot like casting Chaos Bolt as a twin spell, potentially depending on your GM. Unfortunately, most GMs probably wouldn't allow it because of I don't know how familiar you are with Chaos Bolt.
Why don't you explain it for the
listener? So here's how this reads. You hurl an undulating, warbling mass of chaotic energy at one creature in range. You make a ranged spell attack against the target. On a hit, they take 2d8 plus 1d6. And then I'll get into the details of what specifically that does here in a second. But if you roll the same number on both d8s, then the chaotic energy leaps from the target to a different creature of your choice within 30 feet of it. And you make a new attack roll against that target and a new damage roll. And if it continues to, roll doubles on stuff, then it'll continue to bounce. Theoretically, your attack is against a single target. Rules, whether this is rules as written, rules as intended, this is where it kind of gets a little dicey because it has the possibility of jumping to a second target. But is that the intent of twin spell or not? That's going to depend on your DM. If they don't allow it, then go back to the transmuted spell. Don't bother with twin spell. You'll get along just fine without it.
Sure.
So either way, all those are fairly interchangeable. But the point of that is the part that I left out of the Chaos Bolt, which is you choose one of the D8s that you rolled, and the number rolled on that die determines the attack's damage type as shown below. And so you have a list of D8, and number one is acid, two is cold, three is fire, on down the list. We want to focus on cold, right? Because if I do cold damage, I do additional damage. So to help facilitate that, the other feat that I have is the same one that you took. Elemental Adept. Yes, because spells you cast ignore resistance to cold damage, which that's our bread and butter. We like that. And when you roll damage for a spell you cast that deals cold damage, you can treat any one on a damage die as a two. Which means if we roll our 2d8 plus 1d6, if we roll acid, we roll a one or a one, we can change them to a two, which increases our likelihood of getting two twos and doing cold damage, but also increase our likelihood of bouncing the spell to somebody else and dealing additional cold damage to another person. And that'll continue to chain as you go.
That's weird, but interesting.
Yes, yes. Because the way it's written, if it deals cold damage, so if one of them is already dealing cold damage, or if you have your transmuted spell and you say it's going to do cold damage regardless of what it says that it does, mm-hmm. either way, you can have that trigger and have your one switch to a two, or have both of them, because it's automatic. You know, there's weird finagly ways depending on how your GM is going to let you do it, but it is doable, and it increases your probability of getting your cold and your probability of having it jump to multiple people.
Right. Interesting.
So that's your main action. And then if you have your quicken spell, everybody's favorite warlock cantrip, Elder's Blast. Sure. And again, with the high charisma, the other invocation is Agonizing Blast. So you're doing +4 damage with your Agonizing Blast. If you really want to rub it in, you use your sorcery point to change it to ice instead. But you're doing +4 or +4 regardless of how that works. So that doesn't necessarily matter a whole lot. But Eldritch Blast, then you're getting 2 shots off at 10th level. So you're using your Chaos Bolt and you're doing 2 Eldritch Blasts every single round for a number of rounds for basically, you know, 1, maybe 2 sorcery points per round. Most mm-hmm. combats don't last longer than 3 or 4 rounds. You're sitting at, with this build, 8 sorcery points. You should be golden to last through an entire combat. That's the basics of it. So Agonizing Blast, Devil's Sight are the 2 invocations. I didn't specify how I got some of these things. Fairy Fire and Darkness both come by virtue of it being a drow half elf.
Okay.
So the drow magic gives you Dancing Lights as a cantrip, and then Fairy Fire and Darkness both once per long rest.
Gotcha.
So those are there. I mean, some of the other spells are nice. I do also have Armor of Agathys, which I can cast using one of my Warlock Pact things at mm-hmm. just first level is just a little bit of a boost. Or I have 2 fourth level spell slots, and outside of Greater Invisibility, I don't necessarily have anything that I'm eager to cast at fourth level. So I could always cast a fourth level Armor of Agathys and have quite a bit of, you know, resilience against people coming up at melee, assuming they find me anyway.
Sure.
And especially if I'm not using Greater Invisibility, again, I've got 2 fourth level slots that I don't really have a use for. I might as well use Armor of Agathys, especially if I'm going to be visible. I can upcast a number of things. One of the new spells, I believe, probably based on the name, I believe it's from Rime of the Frostmaiden, that is fun at second level, called Rime's Binding Ice.
Okay.
Burst of cold energy emanates from you in a 30-foot cone. So 30-foot cones are kind of rare to come by, especially second level. I don't know that I've ever seen that before. Each creature makes a con save. If they fail, they take 3d8 cold damage, and they're hindered by ice formations for 1 minute, or until it or another creature within reach of it uses an action to break away the ice. If they're hindered by ice, they have a speed reduced to 0. On a successful save, a creature takes half as much damage and isn't hindered. But that's a second level spell.
Right.
So 30-foot cone, 3d8 cold damage, and the opportunity to slow down even half of the party that gets caught in that range is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Right. And again, if you have the cold affinity, which this build has, and it's technically 3d8 +4 on everybody. That's a nice one. That's a second level spell. And if you really want to upcast it, you keep increasing by a d8 every time you upcast. I gave him Counterspell. I gave him Dispel Magic. This is going to be a lot of really where he would use a number of his middling spell slots for. Is to, like, I'm going to control the battlefield not only by setting the stage, but any type of spell that you try to cast, I'll decide whether it stays on the battlefield or not.
Sure.
A lot of reaction based stuff. And he's got Hellish Rebuke Which if I really wanted to either flavor it as it's, you know, blue, like icy flames and just keep it fire damage, or I could literally transmute it if I wanted to and make it, you know, cold.
Right.
Especially since with the elemental adept, it'll overcome any ice resistance that somebody may have.
Yep.
So that's a reaction, the dispel magic and the counterspell, all reaction based stuff. So I figured a lot of his spell slots are actually going to be potentially used more during somebody else's turn rather than his, which I thought it's kind of a way to turn your PC into like a legendary character where you actually sort of get to take legendary actions. The legendary actions. Oh, well, you did this, so I'm going to do this before somebody else takes their turn. Now it's your turn. Or I have a reaction to everything that you do or whatever. So I thought that would be fun, especially for, again, the way that I originally built this character, which was as an antagonist for you guys. And even little things like he's got blink. So it will be tough, despite the fact that he's wearing no armor and hasn't maxed out con or anything. He's just a spellcaster. Between the greater invisibility, the armor of Agathys, and blink, which theoretically he could have all of those active at the same time, the ability to actually, and shield spell, which of course any good self-respecting spellcaster should have the shield spell. So it kind of difficult to actually even hit this guy. And then when you do, again, he's got decent hit points for just a weak little spellcaster. So that was the idea on this guy. You know, you're giving him some ray frost, frostbite, that type of thing, just to kind of round out the build. But you know, that's a vast majority of how this thing plays out.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, you said your max HP was like 90.
90, yeah.
So weirdly enough, this barbarian warlock has an armor class of 15, which is one less than yours, and their max HP is 83.
Okay. So I'll tell you a secret here. We talked about right before we got going about the elven accuracy and that sort of stuff, and I changed it on the fly. The other thing that I decided I just didn't like was, because we were doing point buy, my charisma for a while was only a +3. So dependent on that two hit, I ended up going in and tweaking it and bumped that up to a +4, which brought the con down to a +2. So actually, when we started the recording, I was sitting at 100 hit points, not 90.
Nice.
But I was like, okay, it doesn't matter how long he can survive if he's never going to hit anybody. So that's probably needs to be his strength there.
That's true. Yeah. And you know, depending on. Yeah, I mean, you definitely have a lot more survivability with your spells for sure. But that's pretty cool. I like your build. I like how, like, we both had at least Armor of Agathys is like not central for you, but it was like, it's there. And your fourth level would be a stronger version of it. But I just think it's entertaining to see how different our builds turned out, you know, with at least some overlaps, going with the Fathomless Warlock for at least some levels, but then just going like, you know, yours is very spell snipery, you know. Yeah,
and you can't hit me, where you're standing there daring them. I dare you to come hit me because you're going to hurt more than I will.
right. So I
utilizing like the same spell even.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yours is like using it as a deterrent.
Right.
Or mine is like, okay, you have a choice of me or worse off for everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a lot there. I like it.
Yeah, it's a fun one. And I think ice, obviously, because of that weird glitch with the chaos bolt, it's the one that makes the most sense. But you theoretically could do a lot with whether it's like Scorching Blast first level paired with Eldritch Blast and doing the same thing with your elven accuracy. And so you're firing a number of shots with a single round, and then you're rolling two, sometimes three D20s. Your likelihood of critting on at least one of them goes through the roof. So it's a fun build regardless of whether you go ice or not.
Yeah. Yeah, crit builds are interesting. I don't know, like, I'd have to work out the math, you know, if they're great or just okay in terms of...
They're not anymore, honestly. Back when you could lower your crit threshold and crits did, you know, had the potential to do a lot more, they were a little more viable, but yeah, it's still not the same as, like, if you were to build a crit build in, like, a video game.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't quite have the staying power. Maybe if you could just fully double your damage, it might play out, or the house rule that we've talked about, and I don't think we've ever actually implemented.
Where you max one and...
Right. Yeah. The crit is assumed that you automatically max the single one and you just roll your normal damage, but then you add max.
Yeah.
That limits your, you know, I rolled a crit and I've got, you know, I'm rolling with a whatever it is, like a maul or something like that. It's 2d6. Great. What do I got? Oh, well, I had 4d6. Cool. I rolled 3 ones and a two. Yeah. So worse than my last swing where I barely hit them. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not great. It's still fun, I think, to theory craft it, and still fun to play that type of character where it's risk, high reward type of thing. But yeah, sometimes it the numbers, according to the crazy theory crafters out there, say it's not actually that efficient of a build.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, we'll have to maybe tell the story later on of my Starfinder character that did D4 plus 13 damage. And that's really the way you want to go with static damage. Don't flat. Rely on the dice at all. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to maybe see what we can do in 5e with that. But
yes, maybe try a build where you stack your flat damage, which is really difficult to do if you're not counting magic weapons.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be a challenge for sure. We'll put that on the list.
Cool. Well, do you have any other parting thoughts on your build, or
in general? I would not recommend you making a one element only type of character. Even this, you have a character that's doing physical damage in addition to the ice damage. You're not exclusive to one, and I've got the Eldritch Blast fallback, and worst case scenario, the transmuted spell, so I can turn things into something that's not ice. Because if you're going up against a creature that is resistant or even immune, and there's a few things out there that may actually heal with ice magic, well, now you're not only like not effective for that combat, but you may actually be detrimental to the combat. So having that little bit of a fallback for these characters is nice. For the most part, I would never recommend, even if it's your typical pyromancer, I would never recommend that you go straight one element type and only that element type. You got to have a little bit more well-rounded, but it's fun to build. And again, 9 times out of 10, it may be a great thing to have. You just have to roll with the punches when you get that one opportunity the GM throws at you and says, okay, I see what you did. Now see what I did.
Yeah. Like with the elemental adapt feat, it definitely helps, but I agree. Like one trick ponies are difficult for just overall campaign, but that's the fun twist of these builds that we're working on. Right.
Right.
You know, a lot of these are just that.
Yeah. We've warned you. They are not perfectly optimized, but right. They're fun and they have some cool twists along the way. So yeah, hopefully it gave you some ideas. If you like the builds, or if you found holes in our theory crafting and say, well, that's not how you do it, I guess we'll welcome those comments as well. You can leave those on any of our social media stuff. You can leave it in comments on some of your podcast devices, platforms. And I don't know if anybody is listening on Spotify, and Joseph, maybe you're not even fully aware of this. If you're listening on a Spotify mobile app, they actually allow polls now to go associated with individual podcast episodes, and for the host to ask questions and for you to actually leave responses. I've only seen it on podcast or on Spotify, and I've only seen it on the mobile app, not on like the Windows platform or anything like that. But it was a fun little addition. So we've got a few of those pulls up as well in for previous episodes. So feel free to go back in and chime in. I think it's a brand new thing they're trying out, but I thought it was cool and decided we could jump on board with that.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, you have any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I agree that, you know, cold ice damage is great, but like you said, you know, one trick pony, don't do it. Have at least a backup, just in general, various damage types is super helpful. But yeah, it was one of those things, like, I definitely wanted it to be the focus for Cole, but I'm like, the best way to do that is to also be a barbarian with just doubling my HP. Yeah. So
no, I like the idea. When you first mentioned it to me, I was like, huh, okay, reduce all your damage, you can dish it out. Yeah, okay, I can get behind it.
But, you know, is it the best? Probably not, especially, you know, a low you know, arguably not a dump stat, but just a low charisma based warlock sounds kind of fishy to me. But, you know, I think I got it to
fishy, least, fathomless. I get
it. Yeah. at least it functions. So,
yeah,
that's a step. So,
yeah. At the end of the day, you know, ice is better than fire, right?
I mean, resistance wise, based on the monster manual, I think yes.
Yep. Down with fireball.
Yeah. All right.
Well, all right. We can start that Twitter trend, right? Hashtag fireball overrated.
Exactly.
All right. Well, until next time.
Until next time.
Have a good one. See you guys later.